Blog Talk Radio.
That you and I stood out.
The spirit of the plant has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman. The spirit of the plant has come to me in the form of a beautiful dancing green woman.
Hello and welcome. We're so glad to have you with us here this evening on Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, a two-hour radio show each Tuesday night. Herbal medicine is people's medicine, simple, safe, effective. Please bring your curiosity and health questions. Susan will enlighten, surprise, and delight you. I know most of you know Susan Weed already. She's my mom, so I know her. But for those of you who have not yet met Susan, I'd like to share. She is the author of the Wise Woman Herbal series, five wonderful books on women's health and herbal medicine, including Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, Breast Cancer, Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, Healing Wise, The Wise Woman Herbal, New Menopausal Years, The Wise Woman Way, and Susan's latest book, Down There, Sexual and Reproductive Health, The Wise Woman Way. In addition to being the editor at Ash Tree Publishing and writing her books, Susan is the director of the Wise Woman Center in Woodstock, New York. The Wise Woman Center is open to the public on appointment-only basis. She offers weekend workshops, intensives, and apprenticeships throughout the season. Susan is also available to you online via wisewomanmentor.com. There you can go and view her weekly e-zine. You can subscribe to receive a notification via email each week, or you could join her mentorship program. Susan also offers distance learning correspondence courses and online courses at the Wise Woman University. But you can also just go to her website, susanweed.com, where you will find thousands of pages online with recipes, articles, art features, and so much more. Well, for now, let's see what Susan has to share with us this evening. Thank you, and welcome, Susan.
Thank you so much, Justine. Here we are in the hot middle of the hot months. And we are having a real typical Catskill summer like I haven't seen since I first moved here. Beautiful, bright, sunny mornings. Woo! And then cloudy up and rain in the afternoon. Mushrooms are popping up everywhere. Welcome to the Blog Shock Talk Show. How are you tonight, Rebecca?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's really hot here. We had some thunder this weekend, which is not typical for our area, but it's just a really hot day today.
Do we have any callers awaiting us?
We do. We have one caller waiting with a question. And
I'm wondering if it's Kathy.
Don't recognize the number, but she's been so consistent.
Okay.
Hi, Kathy. I'm surprised. So Elizabeth Mewis and Freddie Zentel Weaver will be joining us at 9 o'clock tonight.
Yes, looks like it's going to be an interesting interview this evening.
Yes, you talked to them last time about tantric. They're tantric yoga teachers, is that right?
Yeah, cool. Freddie has a one-man show called Sexual Enlightenment, and Elizabeth is from Germany, and she trained as an ecological design coach. You'll have to stay tuned to find out what an ontological design coach is.
Sounds interesting. So, yep, questions popping up right here. So in the 905 area code.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, it's Georgia from Toronto, Canada calling.
Welcome. What's up?
Thank you. First, I want to say you're amazing. I think there should be more people out there like you. Instead of going quickly to the drugs, working with herbs is awesome. Thank you for writing all those books and all the information. I'm just awaiting my Amazon order for one of your books now. But I couldn't wait, so that's why I wanted to call in today and ask you a quick question.
Okay.
My question is regarding chickweed. I currently have a follicle on my right ovary, and was reading that chickweed would kind of work, would help me work with that. But my question is, what sort of impact does it have on the thyroid? Or does it have an
None.
Impact on the thyroid?
None? None.
Okay, because I read that it does. So so it has nothing on the thyroid, so it works specifically with the ovaries. Is that how it works?
No. Absolutely not.
Okay, so is chickweed a
I'm
good...
I'm wondering where on earth you read that chickweed has an effect on the thyroid.
Oh, on the internet. When I was looking up chickweed... I
Do
know.
Not look up herbal information on the internet. Most of it is wacky.
I know. That's why I'm still, like I said, I'm waiting for your book. I ordered it through Amazon. It still hasn't come. So that's why I wanted to call in today and speak to the professional.
Chickweed
mm-hmm.
contains some vitamins, some minerals,
mm-hmm.
and most importantly, saponins. Saponins are soapy substances. Have you ever handled quinoa or cooked quinoa?
Yes, all the time.
Okay, so what do you do before you cook the quinoa?
Well, I rinse it.
You're rinsing the saponins off.
Oh, really? So I shouldn't be rinsing it?
I'm not saying you shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that's why you're rinsing it. Because quinoa...
Okay.
has this same substance. So I'm trying to establish
okay.
a substance that's not unique to chickweed, but
mm-hmm.
that's found in a variety of plants in different amounts. Now, these soapy
okay.
substances do the same thing that soap does. So if you had a
okay.
greasy plate, if you put water on it, even hot water, it's not going to get the grease off.
Okay.
Because the surface tension of the fat is stronger than the water. But
okay.
if you add even a drop of soap, you can get the grease off the plate because the soap breaks the surface tension of the fat and allows it to be washed away.
Okay.
Beginning to see what saponins do in your body.
Mm-hmm.
They break open the membranes around things that we don't want, like cysts. And allow those cysts to be removed by the body.
Okay.
Herbs are not drugs with green coats on, and they do not work like drugs.
No.
Insofar as we try to think of herbs as drugs, we will not ever be able to understand herbs or choose the right herb.
No.
I don't know of any herb that works on the ovaries. That's not an herbal kind of thing to do.
Okay.
Perhaps the closest to that would be ginkgo. But you've heard of ginkgo, but you've never heard of ginkgo as being related to the ovaries. Ginkgo contains ginkgolides. And ginkgolides kill ovarian cancer cells.
Oh. Okay.
So that would be perhaps the closest to an herb working on the ovaries, but again, you're going to say, and you would rightly say, but isn't that an herb for memory? Isn't that an herb that increases oxygenation to the cells? Doesn't it, doesn't it serve as an antioxidant? And I would say yes. Yes, it does all of that because herbs aren't drugs.
Yes.
and they don't work like drugs.
Okay.
So chickweed tincture, taken regularly, will dissolve the cells of a cyst and help it to be removed from the body.
Okay.
But that cyst could be anywhere in your body. It could be a cyst in your breast, a cyst in your ovary, a cyst in your cheek.
Okay.
Does that make some sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, because right now what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to figure out what path I should take in terms of, dissolving the cyst on my ovary. So I know that you had written about the tinctures.
Is your cyst on your ovary, is it painful?
You know what? It's not painful when I'm up, or it doesn't really, it's not painful. What it is, I feel pressure. I feel pressure when I lie down on my right side. And, sometimes depending on where I am in the month, I mean, what happened, to be honest with you, last month I had seen someone that deals with homeopathy, and she had put me on some homeopath called Sepia for 2 months. And after I got off it, this is when all this pressure started reoccurring. So I don't know if what she gave me aggravated the area there, and that's why I've said to myself, I'm going to stop doing that, and I was doing some research, and when I found what you wrote about chickweed, I just said, you know, that looks like more of a holistic approach, and it makes more sense, and that's when I ordered your book, and that's why
when I studied homeopathy, what I was taught was to give one remedy to one person one time.
Yeah. Well, she gave it to me for 2 months.
And she came to your house and gave it to you?
No, when I had my appointment, she said, here, take this. It was Sepia 30CH.
But didn't you take it?
I took it, yes, but she was the professional.
Oh, well, all I've heard is she put me on and she gave it to me. I hear no personal responsibility here at all.
No.
I chose to take a remedy that was recommended to me by a homeopath.
Yes, exactly.
Didn't have to agree to take it.
I didn't, but I thought that she was leading me in the
right
direction.
I'm not saying you shouldn't have. I'm just saying if you're going to do something, be responsible for it and stop shoving the responsibility off onto others. She didn't put you on anything, and she didn't give you anything. She suggested that you take sepia, and you agreed and did so. Yes?
Yes, I did.
Okay. That's all I'm saying. But this makes a difference. If somebody puts us on something and gives us something, then we're not responsible for our own bodies or our own healing, are we?
No, I agree. But at that point where I was, at that point when I was asking her, I expected that she was, I know what you're saying, too. I get your point. I completely understand.
Yeah. So we don't want to say ever that someone put me on anything. We want to say I chose to take. I made a decision to take, not she put me on or she gave it to me, because that's not true, right?
Yeah.
She didn't actually come to your house and give it to you.
No, I went to her. I had at her office. No.
And you had to go to her office every time you took this remedy?
No, the first bottle she gave it to me.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Right, but you're the person who opened the bottle and took it.
I completely understand. No, that's true. You're right.
It really makes a difference in how you view what's going on if you can right here take ownership of what you're doing.
Of course I can take it, because I'm exactly what you said. Yeah, no, I understand. No, you're right.
So what's in a homeopathic remedy? It's a very simple answer. Nothing is in a homeopathic remedy. Nothing of any kind. There is not even a single atom of any plant in a homeopathic remedy. So this is one of the reasons why I am so fierce about this. If somebody gives you a homeopathic remedy, if they put you on a homeopathic remedy, there's no way it can work. You have to be personally involved in order for a placebo to work. Nor is there any way that it could cause any side effect or any rebound or basically anything at all.
Well, the one thing is, after 2 months of taking it, when I had called her up, because one morning I woke up and I had extreme, it's never happened to me before in my life, the room actually just started to spin. And it happened twice, and I didn't know what was going on. And then actually I called her, and I sent her an email, and I said, this is the situation. She goes, okay. She goes, you need to completely get off Septu because those are one of the side effects from it if you take it for too long. And I said, okay. And she goes, just completely don't even touch it. She goes, just stay off it, and then we'll regroup again after a while. And I said, okay. And then it took actually a week for me to kind of get back to normal again, because it seemed that every time I would lie down, I would get dizzy. But the first time it happened, it was like it's never happened to me before. So that's what she'd mentioned to me. And then from that point, I decided, you know what?
A woman wrote into Prevention Magazine and said, I drank a cup of oat straw tea and had a heart attack. You should warn people.
Oh, I don't know,
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's...
You don't think she had a heart attack because she drank oat straw. I certainly don't think she had an heart attack because she drank oat straw.
No, I mean, it's oat straw. Right? No, of course.
Cause and effect are very difficult to put together. And it is definitely the place where the human mind is at its worst, is in looking at cause and effect. Again, let me be clear with you. What is in a homeopathic remedy is nothing. Nothing is in that homeopathic remedy. There is not a single atom of any plant. Were you taking little white pills or drops?
It was a tincture, drops,
That's water, that's water and brandy. That's it. It's water and brandy. There is nothing in there but water and brandy. Nothing.
Yeah.
Not even an atom of an herb is in there. Not one.
No.
I received in the mail some years prior a bottle of vitamin O tincture and a 350-page book of testimonials. People had taken vitamin O and their sight was restored. Their hearing was restored. They could walk. Their multiple sclerosis was cured. I mean, you read this book like you really wanted vitamin O because it was obviously like the panacea of the world. But having somewhat of a scientific background, I was able to turn the bottle around and read what was in it, which was, in fancy words, saline solution.
Oh, my goodness.
That has more possibility of having an effect than a homeopathic remedy does, because at least there's some salt in it.
That's
but basically, it was 350 pages of placebo effect, wasn't it?
Yeah.
These people would have sworn that vitamin O cured them. But it didn't. It was their belief that cured them. And that's what I'm saying. When we're working with a placebo, it is belief that cures. And if someone else tells you to do it and somebody else gives it to you, then your belief is not there, and therefore it can't actually have an effect on you because you're not engaging your belief. Now, I personally don't think that the homeopathic remedy made you dizzy, because if it had, as soon as you stopped taking it, the dizziness would have gone away. So I don't buy this story that this had anything to do with the homeopathic remedy.
Well, I don't know. When I called her, she said that's one of the symptoms, and I just, I said, okay, and I just stopped taking it, and then...
And then a week later, your symptoms went away again. You know, suppose you had your finger in the fire. And you said, ouch, it hurts. And I said, take your finger out of the fire. And your finger continued to burn for a week. Then we would have to say that taking your finger out of the fire wasn't effective. So, again, I have training as a homeopath. I work very closely with homeopaths. I am quite up to date with homeopathy. And I am not saying anything against it. I do believe in faith medicine. I do believe in mind medicine. I do believe in the placebo effect. But I don't believe that the placebo effect occurs without our conscious engagement of it. And there's certainly nothing wrong with using herbs. But what I'm hoping to encourage you to do is to become an active participant, and I feel that you're on the verge of this, in what's happening, rather than having people tell you what to do.
Well, and that's exactly where it's brought me now. And when it comes to herbs, I've taken herbs in the past, but through traditional Chinese medicine. But now, exactly what you said, I'm more engaged in it now. And, for instance, I haven't stopped reading on certain things in the last, I would say, I'm constantly reading about stuff, like when it comes to herbs, and I really want to get an understanding from it because I believe in it because I know it's worked for me in the past. So now that's why I'm calling the show, right?
That's what I'm saying. I can sense that you're right on the verge of making that leap to actually taking care of yourself instead of going to a Chinese practitioner who gives you herbs that you don't know what they are, what the names are, what they do.
Exactly. And when it comes to, you know, and for me, it's hard for me to go to doctors as it is. Like, I have a phobia of going to doctors. Not that I haven't gone. I've gone, but it's a big deal for me. And I'm not a type of person that will take medication and all that sort of stuff. I've been grown up to have more of a holistic approach to things, but now it's completely different after reading a lot of things that you've written. And it's really engaged me into herbs and all that sort of stuff. And like I said, and that's why I'm trying to look for another alternative where I can kind of see what I'm putting into my body, be knowledgeable and educated of exactly what's going into my body, what sort of effect it will have. And, you know, and that's why when it came for the follicle on my ovary, when I was reading what you have to write about with chickweed and all that sort of stuff, I was like, I wonder if this is...
Your goal is unachievable. You will never know exactly what happens with everything you put in your body.
No, absolutely not.
No one does. No one can even tell you exactly what happens with any one food that you put in your body. Chocolate, for instance, contains over 1,100 separate components. So, I mean, I certainly, you know, wonderful, but it's the work of about 1,000 lifetimes to know exactly what everything is doing in your body.
Yeah, of course.
So what I suggest to people is that they eat what's in season where they live. Eat the broadest possible diet, include something from every category of food in your diet, anything that you're Xing out that's a real food is a problem. So it's important to have dairy products. It's important to have meat. It's important to have fish. It's important to have whole grains. It's important to have nuts and beans and so on.
Now, in terms of ovarian cysts, I've heard what I've read is that you should stay away from dairy. Do you agree? Well, obviously, do you agree with that?
I think it's a bunch of BS.
Okay.
Actually, let me be even stronger. I think it's woman-hating.
Yeah?
Yeah. Who makes milk? Women.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, women make milk. Therefore, hatred of milk is hatred of women.
I never looked at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love reading your stuff. You give me such insight. It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is great.
So,
this is great.
For women, I would say the minimum requirement of dairy is a quart of yogurt a week.
And
one
so
of the major problems with women not consuming dairy is they then use dairy substitutes, like soy beverage or oat beverage or rice beverage, all of which are horrible for your health.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking about the thyroid? Soy, anything, destroys your thyroid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Except for miso and tamari.
Yeah.
This is one of the reasons that I am so pro-dairy is that I don't want women especially using dairy substitutes.
Yeah.
We've been talking for a long time. I know there's other people waiting, so let's say goodnight, green blessings, and to be continued, eh?
Okay, thank you.
Jay, call me back. And let me know how your sister's responding to taking chickweed tincture a couple of times a day.
Okay, thank you, Susan.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Bye now.
Okay, we have 5 callers waiting.
All right, I will try to be less loquacious.
All right, in the 603 area code.
Hi, Susan. It's Rose from New Hampshire.
Hi,
I'm
Rose.
Hi, so happy to get through again. Thank you. I'm the one, if you don't recall, who was waiting eagerly for the linden blossoms to appear.
Yes.
And then I'm also the one who was asking you about comfrey before that. Now, I have 2 things to ask you, please. First thing about the linden. I missed, after waiting for a whole month, checking them every day, waiting for those sweet little balls to open, those little blossoms, those little buds to open, I missed the opportunity. It was a very short window, and because we had so much rain, I didn't get to harvest them. I wasn't here when they did open, and then I was waiting for the rain to stop so I could harvest them. And by the time the rain stopped a couple of times because they were so wet, by the time I got out there, they were all gone. They must have a very short window unless this was an unusual year because of all the rain.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by very short. It's actually a tolerable bloom time. Most linden trees bloom for between 7 to 9 days.
Oh, no, this one didn't at all last that long. But we had a full at least a week of rain. It kept off and on. And I didn't get out there 2 of the times when they were dry. I had something else on my plate. So I didn't get out there 2 of the times that they were dry enough to harvest, and then it was rain the rest of the time. So, okay, I believe you. So my question is, because I believe you mentioned that as soon as they start to open, they should be harvested then when there are bees around them. Was I correct in remembering that?
I prefer to harvest my linden when there are bees in the blossoms, yes.
Bees, okay. Now, my question is it a waste of my time to harvest it after the blossoms the petals have fallen off? I tried it, and I harvested some. I did make the infusion. It was slippery. There was color.
Wait,
it had that silky saponin taste.
Hold
on.
Wait a minute. You harvested, made an infusion. Did you dry it?
Oh, yes.
Well, you didn't say that?
I'm sorry. I forgot. I get nervous whenever I'm on the phone.
That's okay. I can only relate to what you say. I'm not making stuff up.
Of course. I did dry it. I've learned that from you.
Okay.
Yes, I did.
Okay. And then you weighed out 1/2 ounce.
Yes, I did. I remembered the 1/2 ounce part on that one. I think that's
good.
Only for linden.
only for Linden, that's right. And you made your, excuse me, your infusion.
Yes, I did.
And?
And when I, this is my trying it for the very first time ever, and it did have a silky texture to it. And my question is, am I wasting my time by making an infusion if the blossoms were already passed, but I did get that little green, I got what remained of the blossoms, but it was like just the dried part, but that little lime-colored leaf that you say is actually part of the blossom, because it's not the full green leaf, the heart-shaped leaf, it's the little appendage, the lime, the different color appendage. So my question is, is there still some medicinal value in it, even though I missed the blossoms with the bees around them?
The whole linden tree is considered medicinal. The bark, the leaves,
good.
And the flowers are considered to be the choicest part of it. They have a lot of varying abilities. So it would rather be like saying, I missed picking the green beans, and the beans have dried out in the field. Could I still pick them? Well, yes, but they're not green beans anymore. Now they're shell beans, right?
Right. Right.
So, yes, you can still pick them, but if you're going to expect them to be the same, they're not.
Great. So it's not a total waste of time what I'm doing. I'm still going to benefit from the infusions.
As a matter of fact, the seeds, those round seeds with that little point on them, during World War I were collected and ground up to make a chocolate substitute. Every single part of this tree is edible.
Wow. So I should leave some of these blossoms that are going to go to seed so that they go to seed, and then I will be able to harvest the seed?
That's usually what happens to flowers, is they turn into seeds. And
I
do not know the trick of turning it into chocolate. I don't know what kind of equipment you would need to grind it. It's pretty hard.
How tiny is it, the seed?
About the size of a green pea.
That large?
I wouldn't call that tiny.
No, me neither.
As a matter of fact, you may at this point, I don't know, you know, but you may actually be harvesting some of them.
No, it looked like what I had. I need to get out there and harvest again, because I only did it that once because I didn't know if it was a waste of time. It didn't appear to have anything. I'm trying to find it right now. It just looked like the petals had fallen off and it hadn't turned to a seed yet. You know what I'm saying? The petals had just fallen off.
Yeah. Okay.
That's okay.
So there's
plenty
more.
So I will continue to do that, and I'll give that a try and see what the seeds will produce. So all you have to do is grind up the seeds and...
No, I've never made it. I've never seen a recipe for it.
Oh, but you know this was done when?
I do know it was done, but I don't know how.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, I move...
Also remind you that you can buy linden flowers. They're an item of commerce. They're about $15 a pound from Frontier. So I certainly would never restrict myself to using only herb that I had harvested.
Oh, no. I've been buying, since I started talking to you a couple months ago, I've been buying the comfrey.
All right. I just wanted to be sure that you weren't needlessly limiting yourself.
Oh, no. It's out of necessity, actually. And I think it's a blessing that I discovered this linden tree on my property.
Isn't it wonderful?
Oh, it's just awesome because all my ancestors harvested, and I brought that up last time I talked to you, from Poland.
Yeah.
They all had linden. And,
yeah.
Okay. So I do purchase the comfrey and the red clover. Oh, I have been. And the oat straw. And I've been doing those, but now, and I wanted to add this one to it, and because I just couldn't afford to purchase them, and I said, okay, thank you, what a blessing, thank you.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
So that worked for me. Now, I must thank you very much for, you also were the one who recommended for my anxiety. It is already better. You mentioned that to me a little over, I don't know, a month ago or a month and a half ago. And the motherwort for me, I was only able so far to get one bottle, and I'm just using it very sparingly, but it has helped, and I need to get more. And I had problems trying to find the one that was made correctly, and so I'm going to have to look in my notes so I don't waste up too much time if you have more callers, and I will do that so I can get more of the right one. And I want to tell you thank you so much. But also, I was gifted with a motherwort plant on Sunday. Could you please tell me? I want this plant to survive. I was given it from a person who just pulled it up from her yard. I visited her garden. She handed it to me in a paper bag. I planted it the next day. I just put it in water when I got home, and I planted it yesterday, Monday evening. And I just want to know if you can give me any suggestions. I don't know if I put it in the right type of soil. I don't know. I want it to not. I want it to stay alive and thrive and reproduce because I have one motherwort plant, and I need it desperately to because I have financial issues right now. So I know I won't be able to harvest it soon, but maybe in a couple years. Can you tell me how I can keep this alive so hopefully it will thrive?
Motherwort prefers a sunny location and good garden soil. It is a weed. It can be found in vacant lots in cities throughout North America. Remind me where you live.
It's okay, southern New Hampshire.
There is motherwort growing within walking distance of you. Lots of it.
I've not seen it. I will look some more.
What are you looking for?
Well, it's, let me think. It's in the garden, so I can't look at it here. It has, let's see, it's very tall, and the leaves are... I remember the shape of the leaves, and then it has had these blossoms around this, hugging the stem going up. So I really wasn't sure what to look for until she gave it to me. And then I remember it looked very familiar years ago when I used to live in New Jersey. I did see it, plenty of it there. I had forgotten what motherwort looked like. I just know that I wanted to see if I could.
It might be that you were close to the coast.
I was living in
close
New Jersey.
Close at all to the ocean?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because it doesn't like
maybe
the ocean.
Maybe somebody had planted it there. You know, I had only lived there 3 years, so.
It's a weed.
Before we moved.
It's a weed. It grows
so
everywhere.
So it likes salt air?
It does not like salt air. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, are you saying now perhaps I live near the ocean?
That's what I'm asking you.
Oh, now. I'm sorry. I thought you meant New Jersey. And maybe that's why it grew there, because I was in near the ocean. No, I'm in the Manchester area, which is not, it's inland. It's not near the ocean. It's
right.
1 hour from Boston.
That is tiring about. So I think your motherwort will do fine. My only hesitation is pulled up out of the ground. Well, that
yeah,
does
I
not.
Yeah, I know. I was a little.
And that doesn't make for a plant that's very happy now, does it?
No. And I winced a little, and I apologized to it when on the ride home.
Right.
I talked.
So that's my only hesitation is when you said pulled up out of the ground. I'm like, okay, is that going to be all right with this plant? And if it is, it is. And if it ain't, there's not too much we can do about it.
No, but thank you for filling me in, because you know what? I did good. because I gave it some, I put it in my regular garden soil, and I added some lobster compost. So it had a good garden soil, and it's in the sun.
Wonderful. All right, my dear, let's say goodbye, and let's let another caller get through.
Thank you, and thank
Green
you
blessings.
For helping me with my anxiety.
You are welcome. Bye-bye.
Moving on to the next caller in the 828 area code.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. How are you tonight?
I'm great. Thank you. I'm a first-time caller, and I'm so excited to be talking to you. I love listening to your shows. So.
Thank you.
My question is about a rose elixir that I made. I just made it, and I am pretty new to herbal medicine making. I've been making your nourishing herbal infusions, so I just felt inspired the other day to go pick some roses, which I've never harvested anything before and used it. So I had a few questions just to make sure that I did it right. Do you want me to ask them all at once or just go one by one?
Let's go one by one.
Okay. So some of the stuff that I read online said to harvest them in the morning, and I harvest them in the evening. I don't know if that matters.
I would never harvest a plant in the morning.
Okay. Why is that?
Wet.
Right. Okay.
I want my plants to be dry. I usually harvest plants between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m.
Okay. It was around 5.
Think about like our lives and plants' life. The sun comes up. What happens? Woo! Plants get going. We get going. Sun is at its highest around noon. Woo! Things are at their highest, their hottest. Things are rocking and rolling and moving. That's that time period. All right, around 11, 12 o'clock, that's when I go in and start harvesting. By late afternoon, starting to think toward relaxing and kicking back, and so are the plants.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, thank you. And some of the roses here, I live in Brooklyn, so I just went to a few in New York. I went to a few different community gardens and asked permission to pick some of the rose petals. Not all of them are in like perfect shape. Some of them were like had some brown creases and like just wilting a little bit. But I picked them anyways, and I was wondering if that mattered, if they needed to be in a certain state to be able to use them for the elixir.
If you're going to hold out for perfection, you're never going to be able to do anything at all.
Okay, that's good to know. Yeah, I'm a bit of a perfectionist, so I wasn't sure. All right, so that doesn't matter then.
Anytime you're holding out for perfection, be sure you're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And then this question may seem silly.
You might
want
to
like,
do your best to see what you can do to help heal yourself from your perfectionism, because a perfectionism is one of the great ruiners of life and joy.
I agree.
Nothing in life is perfect, nor is it supposed to be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely need to work on that. So, do you have any recommendations?
Motherwort is a wonderful ally because perfectionism often comes from anxiety and the desire to do things right. There is no right in nature. There's optimum. There's in connection. There's in relationship. But there is no right and there's no perfect in nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as soon as we find ourselves thinking about right and perfect, we know that we are being unnatural.
Mm-hmm.
So motherwort, as the last caller was talking about, can help to relieve anxiety. So if allowing life to be as it is makes you anxious, take some motherwort rather than trying to push life around is my suggestion.
Okay.
Okay.
I think it's just because this is a new world to me, working with herbs, and so I just feel like I'm still learning. So in the meantime, I just, you know.
So do you go to the supermarket and buy produce?
Yeah.
And you prefer to buy produce that looks plastic and has no blemishes of any kind?
No, not at all.
Well, I don't see why you are suddenly making something different between rose petals and tomatoes.
Yeah, it's true. It's a good point.
You're used to handling plant material, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
You're used to buying it, shopping for it, cooking it, preparing it?
Yeah.
Herbs are just plant material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not complicated. Two-year-olds can do it.
You're right. I know. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask about the spirit that I used. I've seen and heard you say that you only like to use 100 proof vodka. Does it matter if it's green vodka, potato vodka, if it should be organic?
No.
Okay. Because it was actually kind of difficult to find 100 proof vodka. I went to about 6 or 7 different places, and I finally found like a Smirnoff 100 proof vodka. And it was green, and I wasn't sure if that mattered. And it doesn't.
You need me to say it again? That it doesn't matter?
No. Okay.
Okay. All right. So
we
need to say green blessings and to be continued. Because if you had been willing to simply accept my answers, we could have gotten twice as many questions done. But after I said there's makes no difference, you have to explain all over again, and that's just used up our time. And our time is now at an end, and we have to go on to the next questioner. But you're free to call again anytime you want to, okay?
I understand. Thank you so much.
Okay. Green blessing. Bye.
Green blessing.
All right. The next caller in the 5710 area code.
Hello.
How are you? I'm a first-time caller. I'm calling from Virginia, Northern Virginia, near Washington, D.C.
Hello?
Hello. Yes, indeed. You haven't said anything interesting. Please go ahead.
Okay. I'm 38 years old, and I went for a random checkup because my period was late. And then the doctor started running tests, and I found out that I have a high FSH level and low AMH. And I haven't had any, I don't have any surviving children. And so we were just doing fertility tests, and we did they checked my fallopian tubes, and I found out that they're both blocked. And they want to send me immediately to an IVF specialist. And I wanted to know, are there any herbs that you would recommend for me to take to help with my hormone levels and to help unblock my tubes? I started with red raspberry leaf, red clover. That's so far.
And how are you using red raspberry leaf and red clover?
Red clover, I have it as a supplement. And the red raspberry leaf, I found it in an oil, and I've been just putting a couple of drops in some water. But I've just been doing this on my own just from things that I've been reading online, and I just need some guidance and some direction before I just jump into an IVF chair.
I certainly don't recommend IVF for women, generally ever. but that's an individual woman's decision.
I understand.
Yep, there's some pretty strong drawbacks to it. The forms of the herbs that you are taking are completely useless.
Okay.
I never use herbs in capsules.
Okay.
How much herb could there possibly be in that capsule?
Right, not that much.
There's no way it could really have any effect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying it can't be a placebo. Placebos do work, and it could work as a placebo, but it's a very expensive placebo, and I prefer to have placebos that are free if I'm going to be using a placebo.
Right.
Right?
Yes,
I don't want
ma'am.
To be paying the fancy price. You probably paid for that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have seen a lot of women who wanted to get pregnant, whose doctors were telling them their hormones were in the right state to get pregnant by
mm-hmm.
drinking red clover infusions.
Okay.
Not the tincture, not the capsules, not an oil, red clover infusion. 1 ounce of red clover blossoms. Problem with the supplements is they are often red clover leaves, which are fairly useless.
Okay.
We want the red clover blossoms. They're fairly pricey. But then again, so is IVF.
Yes.
And we use 1 ounce of blossoms in a quart jar.
1 quart jar. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Put that 1 ounce by weight of blossoms into the quart jar. Fill the jar to the top with boiling water. Put a lid on it. Tight lid on it. Let it steep. At least 4 hours. Overnight is fine.
Mm-hmm.
Strain it, squeezing the red clover to get all the liquid out of it, and drink approximately 2 to 3 quarts per week.
Quarts per week.
Doesn't hurt for your partner to drink it, too.
Okay. And can I find it online, or can I get it at the health food store? Because I went to the health food store, and they're the ones that gave me the capsules.
But there are quite a few wonderful herbal suppliers in the United States.
Okay.
Frontier supplies dried herb in bulk. Mountain Rose supplies dried herb in bulk. Pacific Botanical supplies dried herb in bulk. Star West Botanical supplies dried herb in bulk. Those are just four that come to my mind right off the top.
Okay.
But there are others.
Okay. So 1 ounce of the blossom and put it in 1 quart jar of boiling water. And steep
put it in
hours.
1 quart jar and then pour boiling water into it up to the top.
Yes. Okay. Is there anything else?
Well, I don't especially like women who are wanting to get pregnant to use red raspberry.
Okay.
Red raspberry is constrictive and astringent. It's
mm-hmm.
very good for toning up the uterus of a woman who is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I'm concerned, it's not at all useful for a woman who wants to get pregnant.
Okay.
Vitex berries, also known as chaste tree berries, can help change the hormonal dance. There's no such thing as a hormonal balance. If our hormones were balanced, we'd be dead and we wouldn't be able to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want balanced hormones. We want our hormones to be dancing, moving, and changing. And Vitex helps that, especially helping to bring down high FSH levels, which I believe you were told that you had. High
yes.
FSH levels means that you are moving into menopause.
Yeah. Yeah. Vitex berries. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Also known as chaste tree. You don't want your husband to take any of that one.
Okay.
Because it is chaste tree for men, but the opposite for women.
Okay.
Also known as monk's pepper. It was put in monk's food on a daily basis so that they would have no sexual desire.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if the Vitex is good for my FSH, is there something that's good for my AMH or AMS, or I can't remember, AMH?
I have no idea what that is. I've never heard of it.
Okay. All right, so but the red clover will be good to help my fallopian tubes?
The best thing for your fallopian tubes would be castor oil packs. Do you have my book down there?
No. I sent an email I have
quite a bit of information about, I prefer to call them egg tubes. I don't especially need to name any of my body parts after a man.
Because
Dr. Fallopus claimed my egg tubes doesn't mean I'm going to give them to him. So
mm-hmm.
I call them egg tubes.
Okay.
And castor oil can help resolve the adhesions that are blocking your tubes, which could be from a chlamydia infection or could be from a surgery.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I talked about castor oil packs in some detail in down there. Sexual mm-hmm. and reproductive health, the wise woman way.
Put some castor oil, and I have the wool flannel, so I'll start trying with that. I mean, it's
good.
Not enough. I had a child about 4 years ago that ended up passing away, so I didn't think that I would have any issues getting pregnant, and I haven't had any surgeries or any diseases or anything.
Chlamydia is called the silent infection. There are rarely symptoms of it that you can feel, see, or respond to. It does its work silently, causing infection in the pelvis and the reproductive organs and leaving behind scar tissue that blocks, in men, the tubes through which the sperm go, and in women, the tubes through which the eggs go. Chlamydia infection is the leading cause of infertility worldwide.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
So I think we've got you off to a good start.
Yes. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. And call us back and let us know how it's going, okay?
I will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Green blessings.
We have 4 callers waiting.
How many?
4.
Okay.
Okay. So in the 561 area code.
Hi, Susan. Thanks so much
Hi.
For taking my call. I was wondering what herbs you would recommend for chronic Lyme disease. I just found out that I've been misdiagnosed for the last 15 years, and I actually have Lyme's disease. And my presenting symptoms are fatigue, hypersensitivity to chemicals, EMFs, and severe histamine intolerance and food allergies. Oh, and some neuro.
And this
neuro
diagnosis
issues.
Of Lyme disease was made by?
A Lyme literate MD.
And the test that was used was?
It was done through supposedly one of the best labs for diagnosing Lyme. It was done by Igenix Laboratories, And we also did a CD57 immune marker test as well.
I do not have, you know, as extensive experience with Lyme as other people, but I do live in a high Lyme area, and I have very, very good friends who are dealing with chronic Lyme, and I have never heard of the symptoms you're describing.
Yeah, I don't. It's interesting. I started Stephen Buhner's herbal protocol for Lyme's, and I didn't ever get the joint pain until I started on his herbs. But I have some other.
You didn't ever get what?
Joint pain. Like a lot of people get joint pain, rheumatoid arthritis type of pain. I only get that when I'm trying to treat the Lyme. Before I treated Lyme, I didn't have any joint pain. But I did have night sweats, dysautonomia, and POTS, hormonal and endocrine problems as well.
Again, none of which are related to Lyme.
Okay. I do remember tick bites as a child.
So what?
Yeah.
That's
well,
really completely meaningless.
I was also diagnosed with Epstein-Barr virus that is apparently active.
97%
right now
of the population has.
Yeah.
That's like saying I was diagnosed with a pimple.
Yeah. Well, since I've been on the Lyme boards on Facebook, I have heard of other people's main symptom, but other people having symptoms of extreme sensitivity and histamine issues as well.
Mm-hmm. Here's what herbalists think is happening to you and to many of these other people.
Okay.
What you are talking about is actually not Lyme disease. It's a co-infection.
Okay.
And Stephen has a whole new book out about the co-infections.
Yeah,
modern medicine is starting to agree with us. They are starting to see what we're seeing, which is that this is not something that is caused by one organism, but by multiple organisms. And the symptoms of Lyme are pretty much the symptoms of Lyme. And all these other symptoms that people are claiming, we think, are from other organisms, not Lyme.
Okay. I did get tested for Bartonella and Babesia, and those came back inconclusive.
That's what we're saying. Inconclusive means we can't tell whether or not you have it.
Right.
And herbalists say that means you do.
Yeah. So you think...
So Stephen Buhner does also have a book on co-infections.
Okay, I'll get it.
I personally have a hard time with his protocol because it depends on using herbs and capsules. And I personally find herbs and capsules the most expensive, least effective way to use herbs.
Okay. I
love astragalus, and I make sure to eat lots of astragalus because I live in a high Lyme area, but I would never take astragalus in a capsule.
Yeah. I'm definitely comfortable sourcing my own and using it.
I do believe that Stephen is right, that astragalus does prime the immune system to help it deal with Lyme. But I would go even further. I think that it also primes the immune system to deal with almost anything. I think that astragalus is a true adaptogen and that it helps us adapt. My personal understanding is that if a person has systemic Lyme, they have systemic Lyme for the rest of their life. We're not going to get rid of that Lyme. We're going to create a body that can cope with it.
Right. Do you have any favorite antimicrobial herbs that you keep in your favorite yarrow?
Yarrow, yeah.
Okay. Great. I will check that out.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, I use echinacea as an anti-infective.
Okay.
And I do use quite lavish amounts of echinacea when I use it.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you so much. I'll get his book on antimicrobials.
And let us know how it's going. And you might want to check out, as I said, Stephen Wheeler's further work. Also, I don't know if you've heard about two other herbs that people are talking about and using. One is the root of Tiso, which is Gypsophis. And my daughter has chronic Lyme disease, and she finds the Tiso root tincture a tremendous help to her. If she is bitten by a tick, her body kind of goes into shock and oh my gosh, what's happening here? And she finds just a few drops of Tiso tincture.
Susan, your line just became really, really muffled.
Yeah.
Couldn't understand anything you were saying.
I was talking about Tiso tincture. Can you hear me now?
Oh, there we go.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yes, better? Okay, we're talking about
better,
Tiso tincture. And that just a few drops of Tiso tincture can be very helpful for people dealing with chronic Lyme when it seems to be readying itself to get you. That the Tiso tincture can kind of stop that from happening. And the other tincture that's being used is tincture of the root of Japanese knotweed. And we're all so happy that we found some use this plant, which is so invasive and can be so destructive of ecosystems. And not just a use for it, but a use for the root. All right, good. It's a difficult root to dig, and I'm told by people who dig it that if you don't cut it up and prepare it right away, you're going to have to get some professional help because it gets really stone hard very, very quickly, so you don't want to dry it. I suggest that if you want to work with either Tiso root tincture or the Japanese knotweed tincture, that you find somebody who has made these tinctures, but they could be of some use to you. Green blessings.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Right.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. The next caller has an unspecified phone number on here, so.
Okay. Whoever you are, unspecified.
Hello?
Hello?
That's you.
It's me. Okay. Hi. I'm calling from Western Sydney, Australia.
Thanks for staying up late
for as well.
What's up with you tonight? Or in the morning? I don't know what time it is there in Australia.
It took me a few weeks to sort out the time difference. I must say that I don't feel real smart about that. But I don't really have a question, but what I wanted to say is I'm working on being an intuitive person. I come from a long background of being a nurse for a very long time. I've been in Australia a year and a half. I'm from Alaska originally. And I actually had been a person that consulted with a person that had been a student of yours. I won't mention any names in case she doesn't want to be mentioned, but she had taught me some things and some things about infusions and mother's wort and been very helpful. And with moving and the big change in climate and culture to go from a green mountain Alaska to Western Sydney, Australia, which is a very big place. I just became so overwhelmed with so many things, and I've gotten back on infusions and doing them correctly. I've gotten my motherwort. I have ordered seeds for St. John's and for motherwort and for nettle. I have lots of chickweed here.
Are they going to allow those in Australia?
Well, they the seeds came through customs just fine. Some
okay.
of the seeds came from the UK.
Uh-huh. Because I know that New Zealand has very strict laws about weeds.
Right.
And I don't know about Australia.
Well, the seeds came through just fine. I figured, you know, I'll give it a go. If they get caught in customs and I don't get them, I'm only out, you know, the few dollars they cost.
Exactly.
But I just wanted to thank you. It's so many people in my life in the past have been so supportive and have tried to teach me so many things that I wasn't ready for. And I'm trying to tap into my own intuition and what is right and what is real. And I've been listening to your show now for 8 weeks or so, and I've signed up to be a mentee of yours. And I just, it's been such a godsend.
I am so grateful that it has been useful for you. I was just talking with the live-in apprentices today. One was graduating, and we're kind of giving her the pep talk for going home. And we were saying, you know, you can't force anybody to do anything or to learn anything. You must make it available to them, and when their time is right, they will make use of it.
Absolutely. And I think back to things that your student had said, some that I was kind of like, yeah, I'm not ready for that. I don't know what that's all about. Some that I embraced. Now, of course, I can hear her words in my head. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, why didn't I listen to her 8 years ago or 5 years ago or whatever?
You couldn't. You weren't ready, and that's okay. No blame.
No, I
you
understand.
You came to it when you could, and that's just perfect.
So that's, I just need to be the intuitive person I am. And
that's right.
I have found, I just want to make one more statement, then I'll let you go, but I have found that with doing the nettles, I have really severe anaphylaxis, basically, allergy to a lot of things that are like aerosolized. It's more the propellant, like cheap perfume and that kind of things. And in our climate, sometimes those are a bit abused by some people, not certainly myself, but I've had two episodes of anaphylaxis since I've been here. But my airways have been much less twitchy since I've been doing nettles. I still do carry my epinephrine and everything with me. And I also did get some OSHA tincture just in case something happens. But I guess the real reason why I was calling is just, you know, it's like, ah, you know, now I get it. I think I'm finally on the path.
Yeah! Yay for you! All right. I'm so glad to hear that the nettle is having a positive impact on your airways and a positive impact on your immune system.
Yeah, I just, you know, I've never been into supplements. I never was good at taking them. It was always something like, what, you know. So I never really took tablets or anything. And essential oil things, people were always be into it, and I just never really could get into it. Well, now I know why. It's because they're not good for you, you know. And back when things were cool and everybody was doing the soy thing, I could never get into that. Now I know why. It's because my body was saying, that's no good for you. So I guess I just need to listen to my intuitive self more, and I'm really looking forward to more study as a mentee of you.
I am so thrilled that we are going to continue our discussions and have more time together. And I think that you're doing really great with your intuition at this point. Keep it up.
Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Green blessings.
Dream blessings. Good night.
Good night.
Or good day.
Thank you.
All right, so we do have three more callers. Still.
Now, wait a second. Last time you told me there were four.
Somebody queued up again.
I'm just teasing you, and I was going to say, and I know I've talked to three of them before. Okay, go ahead.
You're sparking people's interest all the time in the 802 area code.
Hi, my name is Sarah Grace, and I'm calling from Vermont, and good evening, everybody, and I just so enjoy listening to everybody else's questions. I do want to know how to spell Stephen's last name, but that's not why I'm calling. I just happened to hear, you know, that he has a book, and I'd be curious to know what his last name
is. Buhner, B-U-H-N-E-R, and it's Stephen.
B-U-H-N-E-R.
And his books are available at my Wise Woman Book Shop .com.
Oh, great. So my question is that I'm 69 years old, and I had my first bone density test in my early 40s, and I had one a number of years later, and then I just had another one, and I'm 59. And they say I have major, major bone loss, and of course they want me to take this drug or that drug or some other drug, and I'm not interested in doing that. So I want to, you know, take care of it on a more natural level, needless to say, and wondered what you would suggest.
Tell me again.
Osteoporosis. And they're saying I have major bone loss.
Let me be more specific. I was a little unclear about the history here. Are you 69 or 59?
I'm just going to say that I've continued to have bone loss. So the first, they told me when I was in my early 40s that I had bone loss. And then again, you know, probably 5 or 7 years later, and then very recently.
And you're how old now?
59.
Okay, I thought you said something about being 69, and then you said something about 59, and I got confused.
I'm sorry,
so,
you know what? I probably did say 69. I don't know why I said that a couple of times to be, but I said I'm 69. And I'm
you
not
are
69. 69. I'm 59.
And, of course, the telephone makes it a little harder. Are you 5'9 or 6'9?
Yes, 5'9. 5'9.
5'9. Okay. Could you tell me about your diet over the past 25 years?
Vegan for most of the time.
But you put yourself in a wheelchair, didn't you, with poor dietary choices?
Say that again.
I said you are now laying in the bed you made with your poor dietary choices.
Yeah,
you have destroyed your bones by being a vegan. And the only hope for you right now is to go out and get some meat. Enough of this nonsense.
I hear you.
Enough of this craziness. Enough of this not being part of the world. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said to us, there are no bargains with God. You die when you die. It doesn't matter what you eat. And I agree with her, so long as we're talking about real food. And every item of real food that is not in your diet is a step away from health. There is no way that a woman on a vegan diet can have strong bones.
Does it also affect your thyroid?
Of course it does.
Not having animal protein?
Yes. It affects everything. your cardiovascular system, your kidneys, your liver, your bones. You're in very bad shape.
Well, I am. I have major other stuff, too, but, that's what I, I don't want to have too many questions, but I do have
an autoimmune thyroid condition. You must stop the foolishness now.
It's a very, I don't know, psychologically it's really hard. I mean, I have eaten meat on and off, but for extremely short periods of time, so I'm sure that those short periods of time made no difference.
I'm sure they made some little bit of difference.
Okay.
But I hear you, and that's what I just said. Psychologically, you don't want to participate in life. Psychologically, the idea of being a participant in life turns your stomach.
God, you are so right on. I mean, I hate to admit it, but you're right.
Yeah.
I do not
Vegans are people who hate animals. If
right.
I said to you, I love you so much that for the rest of my life I will have nothing to do with you, would you feel very loved?
No.
Isn't that what you've said to animals?
Well, I think
I love you so much,
I
won't let you into my house, I won't let you into my life, I won't let you into my body. That's not love, that's hatred.
I think that's what I say to myself, Susan.
I agree with you.
That's what I'm saying to myself.
That's right, I agree.
And I think that's what the world is saying to me, even though they're, growing up they were saying it to me, but I have good friends, and they're certainly not saying that, but...
They're not.
The point is I'm saying it to myself.
Right. So now that we know that, we can make a different choice. So long as we don't know that, we can't make a choice. But once we know what we're doing, we can make a choice. And that choice can be anything. You can say, all right, I understand that, and you know what? That's what I'm most comfortable with. And I've been doing it for a long time, and I'd rather have hip replacements than have to eat meat.
Oh, God, that's not true. And I hear that that's what I'm saying. I hear that that's what I'm acting at.
Yeah.
That's
so,
what I'm
you know.
About.
Yeah. So, are you drinking nourishing herbal infusions?
Here's
your three-step plan.
Okay.
You're going to start drinking nourishing herbal infusions. You're going to eat some meat tomorrow. And you're going to buy some full-fat yogurt tomorrow.
What's the best animal protein what would you suggest?
Whatever makes you able to tolerate this change. Perhaps it's chicken soup. Perhaps it's a ham sandwich. Maybe it's a nice slice of liver with onions. I don't know.
Okay.
What would be okay for you? Because it's your mind and your mindset that has to be dealt with. And you have built up a very strong story about this.
I have. Oh, yes.
Right.
But you know what it is about my
You have to be gentle with yourself around that story and give yourself permission to start to take care of yourself in a gentle way.
Yeah. So what kind of herbal infusions?
Nourishing herbal infusions, meat, and yogurt. That's your three-step plan.
Oh, okay. Meat and yogurt.
Meat, right, at least once a week, at least a quart of yogurt a week, and at least 4 quarts of nourishing herbal infusion. Now, I want to see if I can kind of run through this story because we don't have a lot of time. I received a letter from a woman who was diagnosed as having severe osteoporosis when she was your age, 59. and she refused drugs, she refused to exercise, and she refused to take calcium supplements. And I agree with her about the drugs and the calcium supplements. I don't agree with her about the exercise.
Well, and, exercise is necessary.
Absolutely necessary, definitely. So over a three-year period, she lost 3 inches in height to her osteoporosis. And she said, yeah, she said that she didn't really mind that so much. But what she did mind was that she just felt exhausted. And her daughter
I am fatigued out
so
of
exhausted.
My mind.
So her daughter had just graduated from a live-out apprenticeship with me, and she told her mom about stinging nettle infusion and the wonderful energy that stinging nettle gives you, but without being a stimulant. All right? It's a true nourishing tonic for energy. And her mom started making nettle infusion and drinking it. And she said that within 2 weeks, she felt like a teenager again. She had so much energy. She couldn't believe it. And she said to her daughter, wow, are there any other herbs that I could take like I'm taking this nettle? And her daughter talked to her about oat straw, red clover, comfrey, and linden. Those are the five herbs that I rotate through: nettle, comfrey, red clover, linden, and oat straw. And she wrote to me in her letter that her routine became this. On Sunday night, she made a quart of nettle infusion and a quart of red clover infusion. She strained them on Monday morning, put them in the refrigerator. She drank those two quarts of infusion on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. On Wednesday night, she made a quart of nettle infusion and a quart of oat straw infusion. She strained those Thursday morning, and she drank those infusions on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Sunday, she said, she took off. 2 years later, after drinking only four quarts of infusion a week, her doctor said that her bone mass, she's now 64 years old, that her bone mass was better than it had been when she was 40.
Wow.
I drink a quart of nourishing herbal infusion every day.
Yeah.
I have seen women turn around osteoporosis by eating meat, eating yogurt, and drinking a quart of nourishing herbal infusion a day within 6 months.
Wow, that is so cool. All right.
And once we get you better, you need to pay it back by going to every meeting, every website, every group of vegans that you have ever associated with and telling them how it's ruined your health and they're making a mistake.
Yeah.
You really owe it to other women to tell them what a big mistake they're making.
Well, I know a lot of people that are vegans. However, a lot of my friends do eat animal protein, and they might have been vegetarians, but they have been eating, you know, they switched and they've been eating meat for a long, long time. But, yeah, and they are healthier from doing it.
Indeed, and you don't have to talk to them, but you do
need
to talk to the women who are still trapped in the myth of veganism, and you may not get through to them. You remember for yourself how difficult it was to get through to you, but at least put the word out there.
The
word is more important coming from you than from anyone else.
Right, and I have, you know, vegan raw fooders that don't, you know, that are so very much into eating their raw food, and, you know.
Yeah, and as we recall, there is no nutrition of any kind available from raw food. I'm so glad you called. Keep in touch with us.
Thank you so
much.
Thank you. Thank you for your very powerful message.
You're welcome. Green blessings. And now we get to talk to Dr. Elspeth Muth. She was born and raised in Germany and has been developing her career for the past 40 years in both the United States and Europe. She's a management consultant and executive coach at Business Design Associates, a firm founded by Dr. Fernando Flores. She's worked with clients in the United States, Canada, and Europe. She holds a doctorate in education and a master's degree in music. Her academic career includes associate professorships at Musikhochschule Nordrhein-Westfalen in Germany and the Berklee School of Music in Boston. She was a research fellow at the University of Indiana, Indianapolis, and she's trained as an ontological design coach, employing the principles of the philosophy of language. Dr. Elspeth Muth is also a certified Tantra yoga teacher. And she is going to be here tonight with Freddie Zentel Weaver, who has co-led creative self-discovery seminars at the Institute for Creative Living in Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, and Hawaii. Sounds like a strictly West Coast boy there. He employs the creative self-discovery approach as developed and pioneered by his father, psychiatrist and author Fred Weaver, M.D. Freddie Zentel has served as a teacher and district-wide human relationship counselor in the Los Angeles Unified School District and is a performing artist with a one-man show called Sexual Enlightenment. He's an accomplished percussionist, a stand-up comedian, and a storyteller who uses humor, music, and movement in his presentations and trainings. And Freddie Zentel Weaver is a certified Thai body worker. Welcome to the show, Dr. Elspeth Muth and Freddie Zentel Weaver.
Thank you so much, Sassoon.
Good to hear you again, Sassoon.
Wonderful to be with the two of you again. So I don't know if you heard earlier on the show, I teased people and said they'd have to wait and get you to tell them what an ontological design coach is. So let's start there.
Thank you so much. So ontology is the philosophy of being, and being an ontological design coach has very much to do with designing our being, you know, not just being at the effect of something, but that we bring forth our life through language and through intention. And that is what I have integrated into our work here at Tantra Nova, teaching sexual enlightenment to lots of people, both in Chicago and around the country.
So Freddie is doing a one-man show on sexual enlightenment, but I think there's also a book by the same name. Is that true?
Exactly, yes. It goes all hand in hand, and we, you know, put our resources together 13 years ago, and Tantra Nova has been our baby. And what has evolved is really that Freddie has brought together all his performing skills in his show, and then together we wrote the book. So just to disseminate that wonderful message and possibility that we have through integrating our sexual with our spiritual self.
So what is sexual enlightenment according to you and Freddie?
So I'm just going to keep going here, and then Freddie's going to step in. So how we identify it, Sassoon, it's that we look at two dimensions here with respect to sexual energy. Sexual energy is like we are wired for it. It has brought us forth. It's life force energy. Without it, none of us would be speaking here on this wonderful radio show. It is something that flows through us as long as we are on this planet. And it's the same with animals. So there is an intelligence in this that brings forth life. We don't need to be conscious in the sense of like being able to reflect upon it. Making a baby doesn't need consciousness, you know, it's like the wild impulse. However, human beings have another dimension because we are reflective and we can reflect upon ourselves, just as I can watch and witness my feelings, my thoughts. I can learn to watch and witness my sexual energy, my life force energy, both in a subtle state as well as also then in aroused states. And once I can watch something, I can do something with it. So then I'm no longer just at the effect of the impulse, which may be a wonderful impulse, it may feel wonderful, And it has an even bigger implication once I can use that energy to imbue my health, my physical health, my emotional health, and my spiritual being. So this is where we are distinguishing sexual enlightenment, where we become aware of our sexual, emotional, and spiritual self, and then evolve in that way. Darling?
Yeah, I wanted to add to that, you know, this sexual energy as an enlightenment tool is new and old, in that, you know, when we're in that energy, we're more open, loving, vulnerable. Chemically, we change. Oxytocin's released, endorphin, serotonin. So it's integrating the principles of meditation in terms of developing the observer and the witness state of looking at our thoughts and our experience, working with that life force or sexual energy aligned with intention, like. And that's where the enlightenment piece starts to unfold. You know, the intention that, you know, well, you know, if my story is I hate my job, but 30 more years of retirement, and the fact is I'm just working in that job, but my story is I hate it, then I'm not getting a very full enlightened experience with my work. Yet that can change, not even from leaving that place physically. It can change internally from a conversation, what I see, being, you know, grateful and those sorts of things. That can start to unfold as an enlightenment and a shift from something that seems to be, I seem to be subjected to. And that's where these practices become really powerful in a very grounded, boots on the ground, real world way. Because it gets a little, you know, it sounds like, oh, well, how do you get sexual enlightenment? How do you do anything other than have fun in the bedroom? And, you know, so this is what our work is about and what has been unfolding for us in our lives and in the lives of thousands of couples and individuals we've been working with over the last 14 years around the world now.
Is there, for you, kind of a difference between the Eastern approach and the Western approach? Like, I think that I live in a culture that both glorifies sex and is repelled by it, so that my culture doesn't even really give me a sense that sexuality is anything worthwhile, and the religions of my culture tend to be polarized so that I am told that sexuality is contrary to spirituality. For instance, celibate priests.
Right.
Do you find
right.
that is the same mm-hmm. in other cultures, or that it's a strictly Western thing?
Well, no, there is certainly a repression worldwide of the sexual energetic, you know, kind of rooted in the whole story of, you know, Adam and Eve and the story of our embarrassment around being in the Machiavellian thinking in terms of survival and, you know, being eaten if we're too kind or if we're so totally exposed or if we're too intimately connected with people we don't know, we'll be eaten or taken. Yet there is an intelligence with this life force or sexual energy before we were even aware of our own existence. It was creating life. So in learning how to bring our consciousness to working consciously with this sexual energy, what starts to unfold are those elements of creativity and pleasure, which are the foundations of that sexual energy. And that starts to appear in ways that seem unrelated to sex, in terms of the conversations, in terms of me living into my inspiration about what my life is about. It becomes much bigger than, you know, fun in the bedroom. And you can have more fun in the bedroom, too.
And also
in other places.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's right.
Your question about the differences in cultures, you know, there were thousands of years ago, there was an awakening in the Chinese and the East Indian countries and cultures, because that is really where these ancient practices originate from, or at least they became aware of it, because these principles are universal. It's not just, you know, belongs to one culture. So there were pockets both in China through Taoism and in East India through Tantra, where they really took hold of that and cultivated that awareness and these practices. However, if you go to China and India today, that is not prevalent anymore. It's just as suppressed as it may be in the West in many ways. So what we have done is really integrating these ancient principles and practices with modern technology like philosophy of language, bringing forth our reality through language and creative self-discovery through music, art, and movement, and really, you know, put together something that is very accessible to at least the Western person, given that we live in the United States and we are Westerners. And where we come from is really that that awareness of our sexual life or self is the last frontier. There may be other frontiers, but it's definitely an important frontier, because if we don't get that, we won't be able to, you know, let go of war and fighting, because that uncontrolled sexual energy, particularly as it shows up in testosterone, you know, is the fuel when it's channeled into aggression, to fight and to be belligerent. And, or, of course, we all are familiar with it, you know, the anger that can come over us, and then we fight with our partner, beloved. So it's really becoming aware of that energy and channeling and using that life force energy to come more into the flow of our whole being, again, our physical being, that it moves through our, up our spine, connects with our heart center, our emotional being, and then our intuitive and spiritual being. And that there's no longer this compartmentalization of the sexual and the spiritual, because we are all human beings. That means we are earthly beings and spiritual beings simultaneously.
Do you find that people who begin to work with sexual enlightenment have changes in their creativity?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It, just a creative approach to ending a lot of what seems to be what that they seem to be subjected to, like there's no good women, or I can't find a good man, or me and my wife keep fighting all the time. There becomes very clear, it becomes very clear for them that they have a choice in what game or what story they want to live in or believe or create. You know, there may be an action that bothers them, but because they have been developing the ability to start being in the witness or observer of the energetic and emotional stuff that comes up, they're able to step away a little bit from there to then make a request or have a conversation or get that it's their thing.
Yeah. Also, in a couple of examples, a couple of years ago, a gentleman came to us. He was in the insurance business. However, his true passion was to become an actor. When he came to work with us, that was not part of his reality. It was just a far distant dream. And so through the work, you know, really what we mention here, that integration of the sexual self with the rest of us, it just, you know, it was like a rocket that opened up, and he's now in L.A. Pursuing his acting. Of course, in the meantime, you know, he went to school and all of that. But the crucial thing is that something got opened up for him, that he could come into his flow, and it had definitely to do with him becoming more aware of his sexual energy, and even more importantly, to learn how to channel that energy. And even in my own life, you know, I think that Tantra Nova is an outcome of opening up my, you know, that faucet, that well, that source that is within all of us, and that got freed further through the sexual healing I went through myself. because just as you said, introducing us, that I, you know, was a management consultant. I mean, being a tantra teacher is not necessarily a trajectory where a management consultant, you know, follows. But it was so impactful for me, my own healing and my own opening, and then Freya Santal coming into my life. Whoo, I tell you, Susan, that was like, you know, it was just like a power was set free and, you know, really brought me to do my own life's work. So, yes, it can be very powerful, this creative force, and then allowing us to be more creative in our life.
Do you use sexual energy or sexual enlightenment energy directly or indirectly for healing?
Oh, absolutely. You know, energy is one, so, you know, it manifests a lot of ways, and, you know, we're, even our physical self is just a denser form of energy. You know, sexual energy in terms of healing, as we use the term, healing emotionally from wounds that are so deep that we can't even get to them. But in the practice, as we teach in one of the healing rituals that we teach, where you're working directly with life force or sexual energy, and it's outlined in our book as well, one is able to get more deeply connected, more deeply exposed to these very, very sensitive, emotional, energetic energy bodies that live around, you know, the stories that keep us from being happy in relationship, or the, you know, the stories of family, the stories of, you know, broken dreams, of disappointments, and so on. And that's where the healing, as we use it, starts to unfold for people through working with the sexual energetic as, again, doorway to more intimately shifting and creating more creativity, pleasure, and joy in life.
Did you also mean physical healing, Susan?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, for one thing, it's the healing of our whole pelvic floor area that, again, is not just a physical temple, but holds so much of our suffering. May be a little bit different for women than for men, because feminine energy has been so vilified for millennia.
Mm.
So there is lots of healing to be done. And often women hold, you know, cramps or constrictions that then have physical manifestations in the sexual center, in the reproductive area, or the bladder, or, you know, the sacral area. What I have found is by opening up and learning to trust, and by being in an environment where I actually feel safe, which is so essential, because that is often something we did not experience when we were little. So feeling safe and feeling, open and trusting, that can really resolve tension, you know, incontinence even sometimes. And then, of course, we do very active work also with the pelvic floor in terms of Kegel exercises coordinated with the breath, and we have yoni eggs that we, you know, advocate for just to keep the vaginal walls alive and well and circulated, both for physical health and also for pleasure health.
I have been involved with different people, and occasionally with small groups of people, in which we have actively used sexual energy as a directed force toward healing. For instance, someone with multiple sclerosis, someone dealing with cancer.
Yeah. It's a powerful energy. Again, it was creating life before we were aware of our own existence, and with the consciousness that we have now in terms of our thinking ability, we can start to use that energy in ways that we didn't think, you know, when someone said, oh, this sounds so woo-woo. You know, whole thing's woo-woo. Think about single-celled amoebas, multi-celled organisms, the universe. It goes on for ad infinitum. So, yes, you can certainly use that energy in a direct way as a healing modality, you know, the placebo effect. And, you know, just think about when we are in a elevated sexual energetic level, our heart rate goes down, blood pressure is reduced. Again, chemically we change. We're more open, loving, vulnerable, receptive, in the moment, present. Now, with direction, you can do magical things with that energy, as you have experienced.
That's really phenomenal, Sassoon, what you did there. That's so beautiful.
Tell us more about your book, Sexual Enlightenment. What's in the book? What could we look forward to if we got the book?
Yes. So actually in the book we very much lay out these three dimensions we spoke about of the sexual self, the sexual center, the heart center, the emotional and love self, and the consciousness self. And we go into depth also with, you know, stories from our students and their experiences so that it really becomes alive when we speak about becoming more aware of our sexual energy and center, or becoming more, you know, observant with our, where we place our love instead of blindly just falling in love more in an addictive way. Coming to wholeness in love within oneself and then sharing this with another or others. And, of course, so important then our conscious awareness of ourselves. So, because I can only channel my life force energy, my sexual energy, be it in a subtle state or an aroused state, once I bring consciousness to it. So the mind as a focused energy stream is essential in there. Then also there's a whole section on practices, because then once you have read the book, you wonder, okay, now how can I learn that? So we have a whole section on how to become more aware of one's energy that runs through us all the time, how we can channel energy, how can we use the breath in channeling energy, and how can we, you know, harness our aroused sexual energy, again, for greater pleasure and also for imbuing our purpose in life, our endeavors, embellishing our relationship. And not only with the beloved, we can use that energy also when it's harnessed and channeled in creating more fulfilling relationships with our children. So we lay this out in the book, and it's written in a very conversational way, so it's easy to read, yet gives a lot of information and then also very practical ways of learning.
Sounds like there's everything in the book.
It's not a big book, but there's a lot of good information in it, very practical things that people can get and use in a very real way. So there's stories and, again, testimonials and practices and a clear outline of how this works and what this is about.
Did you have a goal in writing that book? Is there something that you especially want to see happen from this book being available and in people's hands?
Well, for me, the book was is an extension of our continued work. You know, the play that I do, the seminars that we teach, the book, the videos that we've got, the CDs and all of it are all an extension to continue to put the information out there so that people can start tapping into this information for themselves. I mean, in the biggest sense of the word, it's about creating more peace on the planet. You know, it's you know, because 100 years ago we couldn't feed everybody on the planet. We really could do it now, you know, in terms of mechanically, We just haven't made that spiritual quantum leap. And as Elle's been mentioned at the top of your show, we will have a difficult time reaching that unless we get this sexual energy. And it's not necessarily about Sodom and Gomorrah or having sex with anyone. We could teach these practices to nuns and priests if they were vowed to celibacy. It's about getting that life force energy in a way that's enlivening, and it's the creative energy, it's the love energy. And when we are manifesting that internally, we start externally creating that. And if more people did that, then we have more connectedness, more seeing ourselves in each other on the planet. And that's where I think we're headed to if we're to continue to thrive and exist.
Yeah. So that's the senior purpose of the book.
Right.
And then, of course, we know that this happens, you know, just like with your wonderful work, Sassoon. It's then one soul at a time, one couple at a time.
Right.
Where energy shifts, where an opening occurs, and out of that, the vibrational field is shifted, and there's a ripple effect. And so, you know, the sexual spiritual unity and integration and wholeness is really, you know, what we are about, and both within oneself, in a relationship with the beloved, with one's family, and then with the world at large, as Freddie mentioned.
So your book, Sexual Enlightenment, is about sex, and it's about sexuality, and it's about orgasms, and it's about intimacy, but it's also about peace and love and ways that we can become conscious of our own sexuality so that we can make free will choices instead of feeling like we're the victims of our sexuality. Is that...
You're hitting on it. I think in a very exacting point, the book is about learning a new way to tap in and use our sexual energy. So forever we've been creating life with it. That's just a given. And about the last 100 or so years, recreating with the development of contraceptives. And what we're advocating and sharing is how to co-create with this energy. It's the creative energy. How can I use this energy to create a space for me to really see that I can live into my possibility? I can actually create something out of nothing. I can actually move beyond my thoughts and my own argument to fight for my limitations. And that's really what
that
book is about.
Wonderful. And unfortunately, our show is closing in a few seconds, so I have to say goodbye to Dr.
Okay.
Elsa and Freddie Zinfeld Weaver and their book, Sexual Enlightenment. What's the best website for people to go to?
TantraNova.com, TantraNova, the new Tantra, TantraNova.com. Right at the homepage.
Green blessings, everybody. Thank you for helping Elizabeth Muth, Freddie Zinfeld Weaver, and Susan Weed reweave the healing cloak of the... Good night.